Why did Paul Macbeth and Ricky Wysocki start a band?
Tell me why.
Because they both knew how to drive the crowd wild and put on a good show.
Put on a good show.
That is so bad.
That's the best one yet. That's my favorite joke I've ever heard.
Welcome, everyone. Crushed Pepper is back with new logos, a new identity, a fresh name, and three fresh hosts, Eagle McMahon, Joey Tamale. I'm Simon Lazotte. Welcome to the show.
Episode number three. We're consistent so far, and that's the goal for this podcast. Is that right?
That is the goal, and this is the first episode that we actually have a segment that takes priority over every other segment because we have a co-host here today who competed in a tournament last weekend. Eagle, tell us about your trip to Arizona. Tell us whatever you want to tell us.
Well. Yeah, I started my season off in Arizona at the Memorial. The Memorial is actually a lot earlier than it normally is, and the reason being, from my understanding, is that Vista is going to be getting completely renovated. So basically, the course that you know now potentially might cease to exist. So there's a good chance that I played the last Memorial ever at the Vista that we all know and some of us love. And you know, I don't love it, but I like it.
Okay.
It's iconic.
I think Anthony loves Vista. I bet he totally loves Vista.
I mean, if I lived there, I would go play it all the time. I would go play it. I would love it.
Okay.
It's a fun course, okay. But for tournament play, no thank you.
Okay, I'm going to do a hot take right now. This might be one of the first hot takes of this podcast, or a spicy take, if you will. I don't understand why so many people off-season in Arizona. You literally have Fountain and Vista, and that's it. Otherwise, the courses there are less than optimal. I would go as far to say Colorado courses are better, and that is, that's not saying a lot. I feel like South Texas, Florida, even like Georgia, Charlotte, that's like the spot, or even like SoCal, but I don't know. I like Phoenix. I like the club down there, but other than Vista and Fountain, it's not too many great courses, I would say. But I played the Memorial. I was down in Arizona for 12 days to go to warm weather. I mean, that's why people go down there, is to get to witness 65 degree weather almost every day, which was joyous because there was terrible weather back here in Colorado, and I'm back in it now. I played the Memorial and got fourth place, 10.44 average. All in all, not bad. The annoying part of the trip was right before the Memorial, the Wednesday before the event, I tweaked my back, and I swear that I wasn't going to be able to play. Like, as soon as it happened, it was on hole 7 at Vista. We had an Airbnb that was not a far walk from Vista. I immediately walked back to the Airbnb. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I'm not going to be able to play. But it kind of happened. It's happened before, so I have all the right exercises to nurse myself back to health. And I fortunately was able to play the next day. Didn't feel great. Was throwing a lot of drivers pretty soft and completely threw off my timing, but fortunately Fountain is a course that you can kind of afford to do that on. So a slow start, didn't get off firing like I wanted to, but each day I felt better and better, and my rounds got progressively better. So, you know, all in all, it wasn't the perfect tournament, but I showed resilience, and I'm grateful that my body was able to rebound and get back on track to at least play and also have a respectable finish nonetheless. So happy to play the Memorial. It was a good time.
Yeah, I remember I was watching. I was eager to watch you round one because Fountain, I think, is one of the most fun tracks to watch on video for some reason. It's just so unique and different. And obviously, first tournament coverage of the year, I'm extra hyped for. And I could not believe what I saw in hole one. It was like the holy grail of predictions happened to you.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. I don't know if Joey noticed it. That.
Joey has not seen Memorial coverage.
Yeah, so after we talked about what are the worst feelings in disc golf, one of them being getting a green flag from a spotter and then walking up to your disc and you're actually OB, was Eagle's first shot of 2025 in tournament play. I could not believe it, Eagle. How did it feel?
I kind of expected it, honestly, because I knew I threw it way far out of bounds. The spotter just didn't know the rules. I basically threw it into Fours fairway, and there's a clear OB line. And just walk up there. He's like, I'm not sure if this is OB or not. So I gave you the green just because I didn't know. And
imagine spotting one hole and you don't know the rules on that hole.
Lo and behold, OB and a bogey to kick off my 2025 season. And the funny thing is, like, I should never be back there anyway. I threw a delirium, which on hole one, I'm ideally throwing a thrill, maybe even resistor. So I'm disking up quite a few speeds compared to what I normally throw. But, you know, I shook it off. I had a good excuse with the back, so I wasn't too frustrated.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe what I was watching. I was like laughing as I was watching, and I instantly had to text you. And of course, yeah. I felt a bit bad, but you know, it was kind of really funny at the same time.
Is it the same back thing that bothered you at Music City last year, or is it something else?
It was something similar. Okay, it was just like it. What happened was I was wearing some pretty grippy shoes. And there was this turf pad that was like high shag, like super grippy. And it didn't, I threw a somewhat hard shot, but my feet didn't really rotate. So I kind of just got stuck. So instead of twisting or rotating off my feet, I kind of rotated through my lower body. And hence why the lower back kind of, it didn't really like it, so to speak. So that's the moral of the story right there. I actually started playing in less grippy shoes for the rest of the tournament, which is kind of counterintuitive, but it actually, less grippy shoes are good sometimes if you're able to have good footwork because you're able to rotate your foot rather than just Velcro yourself to the tee pad.
Well, what a lovely recap of a great trip to Arizona. Simon, do you care if I do the news segment?
Go ahead, Joey.
All right. Well, a lot has happened. This is the biggest, most robust news segment in the disc golf world that we have had in our brief time running this podcast. The biggest news in my eyes is Discraft announcing a...
That's not the biggest news.
What's the biggest?
It's not literally the biggest. It might be the biggest, but not literally the biggest.
Talk about our teammate, Joey.
Let's bring it close to home. We actually, to start off, we actually have 2 4-year announcements coming out of MVP. One of them is an extension, a player that we already know, a teammate of ours from last year, Silva Saarinen. Those who don't remember, she went 5 for 5. In the month of June last year, winning all 5 events that she competed in, 2 Elite Series and 3 Silver Series.
Silva.
Huge extension. She's one of my favorite players to watch. I've obviously gotten to know her a little bit, doing some media stuff with her. And she is obviously like Finnish, but she does have a fun personality. And then obviously the biggest news from us is
the biggest.
Jeremy Colling, 4 years, MVP, When did you guys find out? When did you? I had no idea until there was enough rumors, and I just put some things together. And I think within like 10 days before it was announced, I was pretty sure.
Did you see one of Germ's interviews? He said that his number one goal was to not let you find out.
I texted. All I did was I just texted him recommending a flippy fairway driver that I thought he would like, the Eclipse Drift, because mm-hmm. I know he throws the Eagle L. And he texted me back saying, I don't think my new sponsor would approve of that. And I thought to myself, well, either he's actually telling the truth or he's just big brothering me and keeping that secret. And because I gave him that pepper stamp proxy. That was his first ever MVP disc, or one of them. And I mean, Simon, you actually went down to Charlotte. So tell us about your involvement with the Jeremy Coleman.
Yeah, that was
stuff.
A secret trip. I didn't know about that.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I kept it on the down low. I've known about Germ since, well, it was kind of like a similar situation with Eagle last year, where it was kind of certain it was going to happen, but the contract wasn't actually signed until like a couple days before I actually planned that trip down to Charlotte. And that trip was spontaneous and absolutely crazy. So I called Andrew, who is our team manager. Shout out Andrew Johnson. We all love you. And was like, how did we not plan me to film with Germ? First of all, I love Germ. He's obviously great on camera. He's a huge personality. And my YouTube channel is, I am here to freaking promote whatever MVP is doing. And how is this MVP's biggest announcements of the offseason? And I'm not involved at all. So Andrew was like, yeah, you know, we don't really want to bother you. And you're like family time and offseason. But anyway, I told Andrew, like, all right, I need to do something. So I talked to Germ. We kind of check our schedule because he was leaving for New Zealand in like a week at this point. And he was, before that, he had to go to Michigan to film his announcement with the MVP media team, of course. So we had like a 3-day window. It was Thursday. And I was like, okay, well, the weather in Charlotte is going to be like 25 degrees this weekend. But I guess we're just going to freaking have to do this or not do it at all. And Jim was like, yeah, well, I'm free. Let's do it on Saturday. So I booked my flight for Saturday morning. I woke up at 3 a.m., drove to the airport at 4 a.m., went on a plane, flew to Charlotte. Germ picked me up at like 9 a.m. in Charlotte. We had breakfast. We drove to a private course with James Conrad showing up as well. We filmed for like 5-6 hours, got two fun little vlogs out of it. And then we went to dinner and we went to a comedy show. And then he dropped me back off at the airport. And at 10 p.m., I flew back to Boston.
That same night?
That same night. I got home.
Is that the first time you've ever done that?
That is the first time I ever flew somewhere and flew back home the same day. And I got back home at 2 a.m. So I got up at 3 a.m., got back home at 2 a.m. the next day. And I fell into bed and was almost dead. But what a freaking experience. Hashtag
worth it. What did you do the next day?
I did nothing the next day.
That's good. That's what you're supposed to do after a day like that. That's crazy.
So
those
Simon,
were good videos, and yeah, you got two videos out of it. That's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I do my best. I'm a veteran when it comes to making videos nowadays. So it was not challenging, especially with James and Germ being like so fun to work with. And I mean, if we can't make good content together, then I thought, what's even the point of doing this?
No, I think this is a fantastic addition for MVP. I think it's just, Germ is such a promoter, and he is such a stickler for quality. I mean, everybody who knows Germ well, is what he loves to do in his hobbies, his board games, his 3D printing. He goes all out, even his jerseys. I mean, for some people on tour, Germ does their jerseys. He has the whole setup for the printing, and Germ is very particular. He's very professional. He takes his time. And when he does collaborations, whether it's, I mean, look at the brands that he's sponsored by, Pound Disc Golf. Like, there's like, you know, there's all these high quality things associated with what he does. And So when he chooses to make a collaboration, even like I was just reading his post about his newest disc, the Proton
Tempo.
Eclipse Tempo.
Particle Tempo.
The Proton Particle Tempo. And just the whole backstory. I mean, you can tell how much he cares. Every part of that stamp had a meaning to it. It had intention behind it. He's just so deliberate in the way that he promotes stuff that when he does it, it's never fake. It's so genuine because he really genuinely cares about that stuff. And I think it's just a fantastic move for MVP to add a big kind of outward-facing brand to their lineup of what I would say are mostly introverts on Team MVP. I would say it is mostly introverts, and this is an absolute contrast. I mean, look at it. It's you two, James Conrad, I mean, Silva. Come on. I mean, good Lord. So Jerm is a healthy kind of dose of energy. And I think it's funny for me to refer to you, Simon, as an introvert, because I think most people in disc golf would think the opposite based on your YouTube channel. They would see you as a huge extrovert. But that is where I think you put a lot of your social energy.
There's a large number of people who have a on-camera presence that they're able to just flip a switch, including myself. Like, my on-camera persona is extremely... I don't want to say different because it's like an amplified version of myself, but that's not how I'm acting in my day-to-day interactions.
By the way, Eagle, kudos to you. I was watching your disc release video of your... what I forgot his name, sorry.
Cosmic Neutron
the range.
Yeah, that you started lip-syncing to that freaking song.
You had me so good.
For like 3 or 4 seconds, and then you said, oh, just kidding. Like, it threw... I was... For some reason, I did not expect that, and I very much enjoyed that.
I knew I had that idea the morning I woke up to shoot that. I'm like, you know what? I think that's the perfect thing to do because I had the song ready to go anyway. So I was like, you know what? I got to mess with them.
I'm glad you didn't spoil that for me. It was a fun moment to watch. And then I read through the comments, and every comment was like, oh, man, I'm sad he didn't actually do it. I was ready to rock on.
Don't worry, there'll be another one at some point. I gotta go bigger and better than
classic
ever before.
Circling back a little bit to Mr. Kohling, Simon, you've played with him now. What discs is he messing around with? What is he liking? I don't know what you saw of that, but did you notice what he's digging?
Well, he's putting Pixel, which I was thrilled, of course. He has his little pair of red Pixels. I think before this he was putting red P2s. Do I remember that right?
He was actually putting with AVRs this past season.
Oh, okay. I remember he likes red.
He went back and forth. He went back and forth from KC Pros to P2s, from what I remember.
I think he's doing Firefly for a little bit, too.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so he was bagging the Pixel, so I was stoked for that. Obviously, the Tempo was a big like for him, which is the AVR X3 replacement. I've never thrown an AVR X3, so I don't really know how exactly that lines up, but they look kind of similar. The Hex, he was all about the Hex. Like, the Hex was basically his dream forehand mid-range, which is kind of surprising to me, because for me, the Hex and forehand does not really go along well. But for the touch and the little... smooth little forehands that Jerm likes to throw with just like the perfect spin and technique. He was just, all about the Hex. And then distance driver wise, I think everyone who makes the switch to MVP will have this initial thought of kind of trying to figure out which distance driver works, because MVP has a lot of different slots there with their 14 speeds and 13 speeds. And the time lapse initially being like pretty overstable, and the fission time lapse being pretty understable. So it's, he said the distance driver slot was for him still like the biggest question mark.
He liked the trail quite a lot from the video.
Well, MVP just nailed the freaking trail. And funnily enough, I'm going to give a little insider info here. I was talking to Chad, who is MVP's disc designer, and he said the trail is based off of, do you want to guess which disc?
Time lapse?
Yes. The trail.
It looks like a shrunken version of the time lapse.
That's exactly what it is. The trail is a slower time lapse.
Well, that actually makes sense. One of those few new drivers that actually has some dome to it, which is like, now that you say that, Eagle, that makes sense. All right, I am going to get through the rest of this news stuff in a efficient fashion. So the biggest news that I started to say before I remembered my values, Ken Climo and Discraft have announced a partnership. They are creating a daughter company of Discraft, Climo Disc Golf, and Dana Vici, former co-worker of yours over at Discmania, is hired on to be the head. I mean, huge deal. It's obviously an icon in our sport. I think I disagree with a lot of people. I think he still has plenty of brand and selling power left. He's an iconic guy, and we have a gigantic base of people who remember when he was playing. And those fans have certainly not left this game. In fact, I think those are some of the most committed fans are the fans who have been watching since the Climo days. So I think this is great for him. I am lucky enough to actually know him a little bit personally. We got pretty far down the road on a documentary project a few years ago, and he was really interested in getting back into disc golf and kind of reestablishing himself and his brand and finding opportunities. And we've said it before, we'll say it again, Discraft is a good place for athletes to go, and I'm happy for him. We'll see what it comes from. They've released 3 discs already, and yeah, it's an exciting partnership. I don't know if you guys want to add anything on that, but I can keep going.
No, pretty. I think congratulations to Climo. I think
and Discraft.
The only thing I'll say is, like, if they have all the power in the world to market him correctly, and that's going to be the key, because the discs are going to sell well initially, but how long can they market it for? And the answer is however long they want, if they utilize Climo correctly, whether that be commentary, doing some sort of docu-series on it, you know, spacing out that promotion is going to be a key aspect of the Climo brand.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the vision Discraft had with this whole thing, and just to freaking send it and pull it off like this, pretty impressive in my opinion. And yeah, I think their production quality for the hype videos was on point. I was very, very entertained and very impressed by their videos as well. And I mean, I come, of course, from a disc golf era where Climo was still playing and the greatest of all time and the absolute champ and GOAT. So he is one of my absolute mega superstar idols of my disc golf career. So for me, it felt like a huge deal. I was so excited for it, and I can't wait to see where this goes. But I mean, that's just me and my generation of disc golfers, probably. I wonder what it's like for newer people in the sport that don't really know Climo at all. Like, everyone from the COVID era, like the last 4 or 5 years, like, I'm not really sure how they will connect to this, but we have to wait and see, I guess.
It's probably like golfers. They're probably like, if you ask like a 20 to 30 year old golfer, they're going to know the name Tiger Woods. But when you bring Jack Nicklaus,
everyone wants Tiger Woods.
When you bring up Jack Nicklaus,
some people, okay, they'll probably be like, you know, I kind of heard that
or
name.
Or
Arnold
Palmer. What about Arnold Palmer? Oh, is that the iced tea?
Or Seve Ballesteros.
Right. So it's a similar.
Or Gary Player. Yeah, no, all these legends in golf.
Well, for me in darts.
Similar to that, I would agree.
For me, I have my personal experience because I'm a brand new fan of like less than 2 years in this world of pro darts. But I have been on a Phil Taylor kick recently because holy crap, that guy is insane. And I'm absolutely like becoming a bigger fan of his. Every day I watch one of those highlight videos. I mean,
Phil Taylor has 16 world titles.
Unbelievable. He just kept winning. It's ridiculous. I think it's exactly what Climo has been missing in his post-playing days, is a great brand behind him to market him. So I'm super excited to see what happens with that. I hope as we continue this podcast on the road Eventually, we can have some guest episodes, and I think eventually cycling in some team managers would be really – there'd be some really interesting conversations. I think Bob Julio would have some really interesting – like whatever
he just
can.
On tour life.
Yeah, whatever he can talk about. I have more respect for Bob Julio than maybe almost anybody else in the disc golf industry. What he has
built. That's Discraft's team manager, just for everyone who doesn't know who Bob Julio is.
He has absolutely built that thing. Obviously, not without help, but it's been really impressive to watch. Okay, let's get through the rest of this so we can move on
to
the next segment. Big news out of, well, not news out of Prodigy. They've lost a lot of their core team members. I think only two or three staying over into the next year. They announced three signings, Deanne and AJ Carey, seasoned touring pros. Deanne is a Silver Series winner. AJ is an Am World champ. And then Gavin Rathbun, comeback player of the year. That's actually a pretty big signing. Finished top 15 in the standings. Great player. I don't see him trending any other direction other than up. So interesting to see those signings. We have Casey White, two-year extension with Discmania, one of my favorite players on tour. Just love his attitude, his whole personality. Obviously, we all know him really well. Super excited for him. He's just – he is – if you want to go see just, like, how to make it on the road and just absolutely take advantage of everything and run with it, like, Casey White is the perfect example of somebody who is just – absolutely made it work on the road, and he's a fantastic player. Jakub Semerad signs a one-year extension with Latitude 64, one of the best players in Europe. And then the biggest news out of Discraft besides the Ken Climo thing is Corey Ellis and Brody Smith are moved down to the tour team so that the elite team remains at eight athletes. And outside of disc golf, Stephen Bunting, one of my favorite darts players, wins the Bahrain Darts Masters. The Bullet himself, absolutely shredding, one of my favorite guys to watch, and gets his first big win on tour.
Wow. Beautiful. Thanks
That's
for the
news,
Joey.
That's enough with the news.
I already knew all that because I listened to every single disc golf podcast that exists. It's kind of sad. Eagle, did you know all that?
I did know all that. I normally don't listen to like anything disc golf related, but it's the off season and I want to know what's going on.
Exactly.
And now, since I am a co-host on a podcast, I need to be informed on the matter so we have stuff to talk about.
We also have to congratulate Gannon Burr for winning the Memorial, and then Robert Burridge for winning the first Tour Down Under event, and then Aiden Scott for not only winning the second Tour Down Under event, but signing a one-year deal with Infinite Discs for the 2025 season. So that's a great way to start off your partnership by getting a big win down there. So there are two more Tour Down Under events left in New Zealand, and then we get into the big events.
That's been some spicy news, Joey and Simon. Now I think it's time for Simon's segment. Let's hear it.
Should we throw in a quick Simon Wines as a new segment, or should we do the
we
five?
We want Simon Wines.
Simon Wines, baby.
Simon all right. Wines. Simon all right. Wines.
We all know.
We need a jingle for this segment.
Obviously, my brand is Simon Lines, and Eagle came up with this ingenious idea of calling a segment Simon Wines because whining is obviously just like the most fun thing to do for some odd reason. And this is a very short segment. I'll give it like 1 to 2 minutes that I can just open some topic and kind of whine about it for, 30 seconds. Let's start. Should I really start with this topic? I actually feel bad now. Okay, let's start with this one. Bad pizza. How is it possible that bad pizza exists? I do not understand. I can't wrap my head around this. If your job is to make pizza, if you run a pizza place and I go to your establishment and order a pizza and the pizza is pretty bad, it just blows my mind. How is that possible? Like, I'm going to make a statement here. There is objectively good pizza and there's objectively bad pizza. It's not 100% subjective. I know the taste is obviously subjective, but pizza, we've all had good pizza, we've all had bad pizza. Like, how do you have bad pizza when that's your business? Like, how is it possible? It's not that hard to make decent pizza. It can't be that hard. It's like four ingredients. Like, how is it possible that bad pizza exists and it's all over the place? Like, it's depressing. It blows my mind. I wanted to whine about it. Please, everyone who makes bad pizza, make better pizza. Bad pizza depresses me. Thank you. Next subject.
Wait. What are attributes of bad pizza? Soggy, like clumpy cheese, too saucy.
Yeah, like the crust. Like if you have bad crust, like it just tastes crust. Like, ugh, like bad consistency, no flavor. And then sauce, I mean, the sauce is key. Like put on the right amount of sauce, first of all. Pizzas with not enough sauce, horrible. And then give the sauce a bit of kick, a bit of flavor in there. Like, not just like a sad little tomato paste. Like, come on. Like, give it something.
You must have had bad pizza the other day.
I don't have very good pizza around my house, actually, now that you talk about that.
Which is crazy because, like, the East Coast is supposed to have some of the best pizza.
I mean, just
supposedly.
Just think about this one second. Imagine your job is to make pizza. And then you make bad pizza? Like, how is that possible?
What if your job is to play disc golf and you play bad disc golf?
Yeah. I actually had that same thought. But it's a bit different if you do, making a dish over and over again versus disc golf obviously has all these variables. And I mean, sports is obviously a bit different than cooking a pizza.
I think you are a person. We all are people who... we make a large effort to perform really well at our jobs. And I think that that is not true for the majority of people. I think that your bad pizza shops have people who are just going there to get paid, and the passion for making the pizza is just does not exist. But that being said,
even talking about like fast food pizza, like Papa John's or...
Oh, you're saying like a local restaurant.
You
might
not have expect it from like Little Caesars or...
No, I'm expecting like Worcester Pizza House or House of Pizza Shrewsbury, where I used to live. Like, I don't know. I can't wrap my head around how it's possible. Like, everything in your life will improve if you make good pizza. You will have more customers. You'll have more money. You'll have more fun and joy. I don't understand how it makes sense to make bad pizza.
What's the best style of pizza for you? Are you a thin crust or a thick crust or a Detroit style or a deep dish?
I can appreciate everything for what it is. Bad pizza is just depressing. And I don't understand why it exists. It should not exist. It should not exist. That's my statement. Okay, let's move on. I'm done. I'm done whining.
All right.
Okay, that was Simon Wines. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you want it back. If you don't want it back,
I don't have
to do it again. I have some pretty hard-hitting topics later, too. All right, let's do the five best feelings in disc golf blind ranking. Because we started our podcast journey on a bit of a negative foot, of course, talking about all the worst feelings in disc golf. So we need to turn it around now and talk about some of the best feelings. I have five feelings written down, and you have to rank them blindly from 1 to 5, not knowing what's coming next. And then see how happy you are with your ranking after all five have been named. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. So this first one I kept very broad on purpose. And you can interpret it however you want. The first feeling is saving par.
Oh, boy. Saving par is pretty nice.
It feels
pretty
good.
I missed the island at Vista on the third round, and I saved the par from the drop zone to salvage a bogey-free round, and I was just elated afterwards.
I mean, saving a par just eliminates bad feelings, which is, like, in turn, like, a really good feeling.
Yeah, it has the potential to make your day and save you from a terrible day.
I'm putting it at number 4.
I'm going to put it at 3.
Wow. Okay.
No, I'm going to put it at 4. I'm going to put it at 4.
That was an influence decision right there. That was totally
We're talking the best feelings in disc golf. Like, saving par is not the best. Like, you know what's better than saving par?
Not getting a birdie. No, it's getting not. An eagle. It's different feelings. Just getting a birdie, I mean, yeah, it's nice and fine, but there's something about saving par that just has like an elite feeling to it.
Yeah, I guess you're right. All right, what's the next one?
Okay, this next one is, I don't know, it means a lot to me. I'm not sure how you feel about it, though. The first run of the year in shorts and t-shirt.
I'm putting that at a 5. It's nice. It's nice. You know, it's something I can appreciate. Obviously, it's something I seek out because I went to Arizona so I could be in warm weather. But if we're talking best feelings in disc golf, it has to go at 5.
Oh my God. I would put that at my 1, I think. I love that feeling of finally some warmth and you can get off all these layers and throw freely. I love that feeling.
I like playing disc golf with like pants and like a short sleeve shirt, ideally. So it's like, you know, shorts and a t-shirt is nice, but it doesn't really do it for me like it. Like you.
Okay, Joey, what do you think?
I'm putting it at 2. I agree with Simon here. This is and 2 days ago we hit our lowest recorded temperature in Minnesota in the last 5 years at -20 without wind chill.
Oh,
and they canceled school because of the cold. I absolutely hate the winters, which is so funny because I used to be a cross-country skier, and one of the best feelings in the world is the first round in the sunshine when
I agree
your hands aren't freezing and you're like you can not see your breath and you don't even think about that, and it's just unbelievable.
Well,
number
you two are both from like colder places in general. Like Simon lived in Germany, now he's in Massachusetts, Joey's Minnesota. I mean, Colorado, like, I might be playing in shorts and a t-shirt next week. So it's a little bit different for me.
Yeah, okay. Maybe you're not that sensitive to temperature as we are. But that's okay. Okay, next feeling. So Joey put it at 2 and Eagle at 5. Okay. Next feeling. Lining up a 30-footer feeling like you can't miss.
That's pretty nice.
Yes.
At Memorial, I felt like I was going to miss every putt I threw. So to have that feeling would have been pretty good. I'm going to put that at 3.
Same.
Okay.
I have had those tournaments where it just, the basket looked so huge.
So yeah. That's one of the best feelings in disc golf, I think. And so Joey, you have 1 and 5 left now, right? That's, you love that situation. And Eagle has 1 and 2?
1 and 2.
Oh, gosh. These better be good. Oh, no. If these are not good, then I would love to hear what you think afterwards, what are better feelings than the ones I listed. Okay. 4, watching a hole-in-one, your own or someone else's. Every hole-in-one's included in this feeling because it's always
glorious.
That's
number one. It's the best ever.
It's 2.
It's the best ever. For Eagle, it's only 2, though.
It's 2. Aces are cool, but like, maybe it's because I haven't got one in a long time that I'm saying this, but it's number two. I can think of other feelings that I like more.
For me,
okay. It's
like...
It's one shot.
Yeah, but it's the perfect shot, and that's what we all thrive to witness,
is it
perfection
perfect?
Of flight.
What if it's coming in too fast, and there's OB behind the basket if you don't hit it?
Yeah, I hate
is
those aces.
Perfect?
I'm circling
and
out those aces.
And everyone in the comments is like, if the basket wins, everybody would be OB.
No, those
you
aces
get a 5,
don't count.
You get a 6.
Mean, I should have added watching an intentional hole-in-one.
Have you ever had an intentional hole-in-one in a tournament before?
No.
Eagle?
Nope.
I have 1. And
was that your goal is to throw it in the basket? That makes like no sense.
Well, I feel like I already talked about this on a previous episode, but I was I was down by 1.
Ah.
I had no choice.
Oh yeah, then
Pathway of the Gods. Yeah.
Well, that's a good feeling at that point. That's the most epic feeling, probably.
Let's hear the last one, because maybe it plays into this question.
The only thing... Okay. Well, my reasoning I was just going to say that when you get an ace, for me, as much... This whole thing now, disc golf, when I look at it, it's a very serious thing. It's associated with eating right and training and practicing and all these things that, you know, maybe some days I don't want to do. And it's easy to remember why I started playing. And when an ace gets hit like that, or a huge throw in for like just those brief moments, and then that minute or two afterwards, it like brings me back to like 8-year-old Joey when I had first started playing, and that excitement of just like, holy cow, you can do something that nuts, that something that would belong in a trick shot video, you could just do that in a tournament.
It's a good feeling. I'm happy with my number two placement.
Okay, so this next one is Eagle's number one and Joey's number five. Nice contrast. Okay, so number five is realizing you're about to win a tournament.
I have a perfect list.
I'm so glad. This list is great.
Yeah.
I have a perfect list.
Eagle did it perfect again. And Joey, are you happy this time?
I mean, I have won 3 or 4 tournaments, and only one of them was sanctioned, and it was an amateur event, so... I don't think I have that same kind of like a validation that you guys have from your big wins. Like, I think that would be, if I had one of those, that would obviously be like the king of the hill of any feeling in disc golf. And for the two of you who have that, I mean, how can it not be? I mean, that is, if you care anything about this as your job, that's what you're shooting for at the end of the day, whether you say it out loud or not, it's what you're trying to do. And so when you actually do it, for people like us who are so competitive, it's finally that moment where you get to shut that voice up for like a day, because he can't say anything.
Okay. Well, I want to quickly say to the list that for some sad reason, it was much harder to think about good feelings in disc golf than it was for me to think about the worst feelings, which it blows my mind why it is like that, but that's just how it is. And now I want to ask you guys if you have any great feelings that come to your mind that I missed that we can just quickly talk about because we like it.
I would say for me, it's throwing a hole that you had really bad luck on in practice, like you were just dreading it, or it's like a tiny little island hole and you throw it well, you get a par or you get a birdie, and then that hole's behind you. You don't have to worry about it anymore. A hole that you're scared of that you can get past with a good score.
Oh, yeah, I do that a lot, where I have like these holes on my checklist of holes I need to get through to make sure I'm fine. And I always end up playing those holes well and then screwing up the holes I take for granted. So it,
okay.
Yeah. I see what you're saying, but sometimes it backfires for my game plan.
Yeah, there's certain holes, like, I don't know, I'm just going to use this for example, hole 12 at Northwood Black. Like, if you get past that hole with like a par, you're just like, okay, that's a big roadblock out of my round now. I can like breathe easy after playing that hole.
For some reason, that hole doesn't scare me, because messing it up does not even feel bad, because 90% of the field messes it up.
I would kind of agree, but there's other holes, like for example, oh gosh, what's a scary hole?
Fountain Hills is a great example. There's like these short little dinkers at the water where you're just like, right, please not this one.
For me, it's like the birdie or die holes, like the holes that are so easy.
Yeah,
that
those are scary.
You feel like that you have to, like, you feel like you have to birdie.
I feel like the beast at Waco, a lot of the beginning of that course, where like the lines are specific. Even like 1, 2, 3, especially 2 and 3. I mean, you should birdie both those holes, and then 5, 6, 7, 8. Those are all very much, when you're shredding at Waco, you're birdieing all those holes, and you're like putting it well inside the circle. But you can bogey those holes so fast if you're mentally like not locked in.
Yeah, and I want to say that when we, in episode one, I think we talked about what's harder, like what's harder mentally to play, like a really, really tough course like Northwood Black or a birdie or die course like, let's say, Fountain Hills. And I said, I think a birdie or die course is mentally harder to play because when you feel like you're not getting the birdies you need to be getting, you're like starting to panic and you're starting to like kind of lose the fun, thinking you're already so far back after just like nine holes of a tournament because you missed three or four of the easy holes. And I think that is the key. I thought about exactly the course, the Beast in Waco. Like the reason I've always failed on that course is because I miss a couple of the early holes and feel like I'm already back. I will never catch up. And I remember every year in Waco, I spiral downhill after the first nine holes because I get off to a bit of a slow start. I miss like three or four of the must birdie holes. And I'm like, what's the point of even keep going if I'm already four back after nine holes? Like, these guys are too good. I suck. I don't want to play anymore. Get me out of here. And yeah, I've never performed in Waco, not once. That course crushes me every time. And it's because it's too easy. It's such a weird phenomenon.
It's one of my favorite courses on tour, without a doubt. It always has been. And I just love those wooded lines. I think it's such a mental challenge, like you said, for skilled players who, I think it's just hard in golf to know you can do the shot and then have to do it, knowing you can do it, knowing that your normal without pressure would be an executed shot. If there was no pressure on, that you would do it. And I think those can be the ones that when it's just happening over and over and over again, it can be tricky. Did you guys know we're not playing the golf course this year? We're only playing three rounds at the Beast.
Whoa.
I'm okay with that. The golf course was a kind of cool property. The design I don't think was very good, but I think just the Beast is fine.
I agree.
The Beast is fine. I'm just going to have to say it's fine, even though I dread it every year.
And we're not playing Roy G anymore for Austin. I thought that was going to happen, and it's Sprinkle Valley.
Sprinkle Valley? Yeah.
I didn't know
that. That course is funky. Have you played that course?
Yep.
I have.
Yeah, I walked, I think, half of it. It was brand new last year. I think it was like freshly cut for the women's major. Oh, boy, that place is freaking tricky trickster.
Eagle and I caddied on the same card that tournament, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, you guys, yeah, your girlfriends were playing. That's right.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Wait, did we caddy the final round together?
Yeah.
I think, yes.
Oh, and
I
they were on
too.
The cut line. They were on the cut line. That's totally it. And I was like, whenever I'm in any disc golf tournament round setting with Eagle, and honestly with you too, Simon, but definitely with Eagle, my like interactions with him are much different than they are in any other situation, just because I like want to respect his ability to be focused. And honestly, like as I'm starting to play more myself, I kind of am seeing that it's not helpful to kind of be so socially distracted in between your shots. But I remember being like wanting to like kind of show him the scores and being like, oh my God, do you see how close these two are right now to like $700 or $0?
Yeah, I remember that. Ratana made the island and
yep.
Like got like a par or a bogey at the next hole and she cashed.
I think she birdied it. I think she made that putt.
She birdied the island, and unfortunately, you know, Maria had a tough last hole, and that was enough to put her out of it.
By one.
Yeah, I do remember that vividly, and you know, it'll be interesting playing Sprinkle Valley. I imagine that they probably extended it or tweaked a few things because it was the perfect course for the USWDGC, but they're definitely going to need a little bit more distance for the MPO to come in. So we'll see what comes from that. It's a cool property. I'm excited to see.
I hope they don't add any distance.
No,
I want to play
will.
A freaking...
You know they will.
I know they will, but I hate it. I want them to keep it that way and have us freaking throw some putters off the tee, some mid-ranges, some fairway drivers, and not... let's put that tee 100 feet back in there, and then they have to throw this impossible perfect shot to even get to the landing zone. I'm already whatever. No. Sorry, I'm.
That's why we go to
this year.
That's why we go to Waco, though. We get to throw putters in mid ranges.
Waco is wacko.
Waco is wacko.
All right, what else do we have, boys?
All right, I have my segments. I'm gonna do two segments. One of them is going to be Q&A with listeners from comments I got on the previous podcast. But my new segment that you guys are welcome to add to if you would like is called Unsolicited Advice. This can be for a new thing I'm doing, whether it's like meditation and exercise, food, or a product that I use that I really like that I can recommend to you guys. And what I'm choosing for this week's unsolicited advice is toe socks. I am a big fan of toe socks. You wear gloves on your hands. Why not wear them on your feet? You wear gloves on your hands, but mittens on your feet. You should wear gloves on your feet. And the reason being is your toes spread out better. You don't have like weird calluses or blisters quite as often. The airflow between each one of your little toesies is incredible. And I've been wearing them actually for quite a while now. Injinji is a brand I like, not sponsored, but you can also get them on Amazon, and it's fun. You know, you take your foot out of your shoe and people look over at you and like, oh, what do you got going on there? It's like a fun little thing that people interact with you with. And you can, you know,
you're kidding,
like,
right?
No, I'm not kidding. This is
it's
true.
It's not eagle. It's not a fun little thing.
No, Ritana wears them. My dad wears them. Ryan, my physical therapist, wears them. Like, when I was wearing normal socks for a long time, and I saw that he wore toe socks, and it was kind of like a little bit of an awkward experience because I'd always come in with my non-toe socks because I didn't want to be wearing toe socks when he's wearing toe socks. But I was wearing them like before.
Why did you want to be wearing toe socks when he's wearing toe socks? What's so weird about that?
There's a weird little thing there. Like, I'd always choose to not wear my toe socks when I went to see him. But one day I decided, you know what? I'm wearing my toe socks today. And he complimented me. He's like, oh, you're on the toe sock game too? He's like, once you try him, you never go back. You never go back. And like, anytime I go see him now, it's like, you know, if he's doing like physical therapy on my feet, he's like, you know what? It's a lot easier working on your feet now that you got toe socks.
I will say this man is, I've met this man, Ryan. Ryan is one of the most impressive human beings I have ever met in my entire life. I mean, doesn't he like kill his own meat, like, and haul these,
he's
like
his own hunter,
like 100-pound animals, like through the mountains on his own back, and like feeds his fam. I mean, this guy is, he could be a content creator if he wanted to. He has the adventures to make it happen. He's crazy.
Absolutely. And you know, he works with my trainer as well, and he's turned my trainer on to toe socks. My chiropractor, you know, they wear toe socks because they're an advocate of like the barefoot lifestyle where you get more splay in your toes. It helps, you know, space out your toes just a little bit more. It's very subtle, but you know, if you try toe socks and you're used to wearing a mitten on your foot, you're going to notice so much more comfort, airflow. Just don't knock it till you try it. That's all I'm saying. That's
all right,
my unsolicited
advice.
I'm
going on Amazon right now.
They're great.
Send us your link, Eagle, for the ones you get. I want those. Because
you guys sold.
Well, I've gotten a pair that, and they're terrible. They would, my toes, the amount of effort I had to get to try to get my toes into those little like toe slots, it was no fun. It was like, if I can't put my sock on as quickly, or at least like not significantly slower, it's not interesting to me.
Yeah, the benefits would have to wildly outweigh the unbelievably inconvenience to put them on like a glove. Like, that sounds really annoying. And Eagle, how many tournaments have you won wearing toe socks?
I started wearing them in 2020, so I think.
Oh, really? That long?
Probably about 8 or 9.
So European Open, you were wearing toe socks?
Oh yeah, I was wearing toe socks.
Well, and
damn,
like
okay, they do okay, work.
Okay, let me
they
run through
work.
The ChatGPT list of benefits of toe socks.
Oh, no.
Prevents blisters, improved toe alignment, enhanced breathability, reduces odor and
that
fungal
would make
issues.
Sense. That would make
this
sense.
Is perfect for you, Simon.
I don't
improves
have odor.
Sensory perception, better grip, promotes natural toe movement, comfort for wide feet. Support for certain foot conditions. And lastly, stylish and fun.
And a good conversation starter.
Simon, exactly. You talking about your foot odor triggered a memory from the time that
I wasn't talking about my foot odor.
I know. But it triggered a memory from when you were at Portland Open in 2021, and I ended up using those shoes that you left because they were so smelly, you didn't want to use them anymore, and you flew home without them, and I dumpster dove them out of the trash because I was broke and needed
this.
New disc golf shoes, and I used those Adidas shoes, and they
no,
were so smelly. I used them for like another 2 months. At least, like, a significant chunk of the season. And they were the grossest things ever. But I was not wanting to buy new shoes.
Yes. Smelly shoes is an issue. I think a lot of disc golfers or athletes in general have that problem. And, oh, man. That reminds me now of the good old Discmania RV days where we had an extra shoe. We had a stink box. In the RV on like a side compartment, we completely airtight sealed it. And that's where only dirty shoes and socks would go after a tournament. And that box, I mean, the smell
putrid.
In that box was at like, it smelled like death. I don't really know what death smells like, but it must be like that. Just absolutely horrible.
Eagle, I'm going to add on to your little advice section just by piggybacking and saying that the new sort of accessory that has been really big for me last year was switching to wide toe box, zero drop shoes. I'm not all the way to the barefoot yet, the Vivo barefoot, but I took a step in the right direction and it's the same. I have the same reaction that that Ryan has about toe socks. Once you switch, you can't go back. And it was a few month process. It's not something you want to do like instantly if you haven't ever done that before. It's like you buy a pair and you just use them for like 20 minutes and then just kind of increase as your feet feel more comfortable. But my feet have, after the transition is complete now, I'm like 8 or 9 months in. I wear them full time. And it is unbelievable how uncomfortable my old shoes feel when I try to put them back
right.
on. I cannot believe I used to wear those. It's ridiculous. I'm definitely a believer in foot science and allowing the toes and the muscles in your feet to be an active part of the walking process instead of over-supporting them and making them weak and injury susceptible.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is something I want to talk more on when we have a little bit more time because I've been an advocate of the barefoot lifestyle for more than 5 years at this point. So that's something we'll touch on in a future podcast. But it's getting a little bit late and I want to finish it out with a little bit of Q&A from you guys. And I have 2 to 3 questions that I'd like to answer. So first off is a question specifically for Simon. This question comes from Pontus Bergquist. Hi, question for Simon. I'll have my first child this summer, estimated July 7th, and I was wondering what would your best first-time parent tip be? Awesome podcast. Best regards from Pontus.
Best first-time parents. I would say make a schedule with your significant other. Don't just wing it. If you're both home, make a plan on who does what and when. and stick to it. That's all. Make a plan and stick to it. That's what me and my wife didn't do. And looking back, I wish we would have done that. On the second baby, we did it, and it was much better. And
like
just
it.
be prepared to sleep less for the next year.
Perfect. All right, next question is from Red Wing. He's asking for a segment, but he's getting just a question or an answer to his question. Could we get a segment about content creation, gear you guys use, how it has or hasn't changed tour life for you guys? Is it something you think manufacturers will start to reward or value more than results at a tournament?
Joey, go ahead, because I don't understand the question.
Give me like the first half sentence again. Is it content gear?
He's wondering about the gear we use, but also how has content creation played a part in our life on tour and how much we think about it versus, at least this is how I interpret the question.
How
we think of content creation versus what we do at a tournament. Like what percentage of the week is it for us?
Okay. I mean, for gear, I would say first off, your phone is your biggest tool right off the bat. It's going to be your go-to for easy Instagram content, Instagram lives, anything that doesn't require quality or sophistication to a level that you feel necessary. Outside of that, I think every player kind of decides. I think everybody who has a YouTube channel, they all kind of have their setup. Actually, I helped Eagle get his setup and then bought it from him 3 years later. So I have a Panasonic AGUX180, which is just a camcorder with a monopod and a mic, and we have some remote mic setups. And then looking to add a Sony A7 S3 this year to that lineup just to have like an action cam and a cinema cam. So, but I'm a content creator. I have a business surrounding that. So that's different than somebody like Eagle or Simon. I think Eagle, you're kind of a phone guy only now. And Simon, I know you have a Sony, is it what, an A60 or a 6600 or something like that?
Yeah, you saw the A6600. Now I have the ZV-E1, which is a bit bigger and better. But, I mean, all these small mirrorless cameras are pretty similar with all little different features and quirks.
It just depends how you like to zoom, so that the biggest difference between like the camera that Simon has versus the camera that I have is when you zoom on Simon's camera, you're twisting with your hand, and the camcorders and the broadcast cameras that are used on Disc Golf Network, they have these toggle motor powered, so it's a little smoother. But you can absolutely develop the skill on a camera like Simon's to get to a skill level where it looks smooth. But I would say the majority of the content creators on tour either film with their phone or a camcorder. And then, I mean, I would say that how is the content going forward? I would argue that Eagle and Simon's entire brands are built half at least on their presence on social media, whether it be YouTube or Instagram. I think that is what separates these two from other guys who have similar career accolades is their brands. And I think that we saw someone like a Kona Montgomery get a big time deal from Dynamic Discs a few years ago. And she did have a win, but I would say that was largely a content based deal. And I think that we have to remember at the end of the day, this is not basketball. Winning games does not put butts in seats. That is not the end goal of your primary sponsor. They do not care how many tournaments you win. They care how much plastic do you move. And winning attributes and contributes a lot to moving plastic. But that
it amplifies your brand. Like
it is
for a perfect example would be, say, Bodanza, who I think has one of the best YouTube channels in disc golf.
Yep.
If he started winning tournaments, like the value he already brings a lot of value to say Infinite. Mm-hmm. But if you just start winning tournaments, then he's one of the biggest names in disc golf.
I mean, my favorite example all the time is Casey White. There are so many other players at Casey White's level that have not nearly the presence that he has. I mean, he is New England's favorite disc golfer. All of the jerseys that he makes are like with the colors and the theme of all these guys in this region, and he has absolutely created this massive brand. And I've talked to him personally. The income that he makes off his YouTube channel is a significant portion of what sustains him on tour. So I think that anybody who is extroverted and intelligent enough to understand that this is an individual sport and your brand matters more than anything else is definitely going to be focusing on content. I mean, I run Calvin Heimberg's Instagram, and he's one of the guys who I don't think he loves being on camera as much, but he's really intelligent and he realizes that it matters and it's important for him to sell discs. And about a year ago, we decided to have me start running his Instagram for that specific reason, because he felt like he wanted to maximize his time in the spotlight, and he understood that it made sense. So even the introverts at the top of this game are, in my opinion, if you're smart, you're paying attention to that.
Yeah, it's a symbiotic relationship between your success on the course and the effort you put in on social media. And from my experience, is that people just want to see you having fun and be yourself. If you have something unique you can bring to the table, show that, because that helps people identify with you. And, you know, for example, like, I made a freaking music video that's very controversial, but the people who loved it absolutely love it. And it's like, those people, I feel like those will be my fans for life, just because I have the quirk to go out and do something like that, and they have the quirk to appreciate it. So, like, know your audience, but also cater to it, because, you know, at the end of the day, people want to see you having fun, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I agree with everything that was said.
What was your amount of deliberateness, Simon, when you really ramped up your YouTube channel? Like, was it a very conscious decision? Did you think it was going to have the impact it ended up having? Like, I just, because it's obviously now, looking back, I can see how important it is to your career, and I'm just wondering, like, how aware you were of that the whole time, or how deliberate it all was.
I just started because I wanted to. I wanted to do it for me. I wanted to do it for the fans as well, and just kind of show people some disc golf or some any kind of. I mean, I early on called my YouTube channel, as like the description to it, Frisbee Entertainment. That's what I wanted to do. And yeah, I kind of never really let go of that, and I still just do it because I want to. I was always very, very clear on that I never want to do it because I have to. I just want to do it because I want to. And as long as I can keep that going, I'll keep it going, because obviously it's helped me in every way, basically, in the disc golf world. So yeah, I still enjoy it, and I will keep doing it. Actually, little announcement, why not? The contract has been signed with my cameraman and editor for the season.
Oh.
So I will be on tour with a camera full time, and we have a sick upload schedule, and I hope this just works the way I'm envisioning it, and it's going to be some next level stuff.
That's going to be amazing, and I'm sure everybody is looking forward to seeing what comes from that. All right, we have one last question, and I think it's the perfect way to sign off this podcast. Or wait, we have this last question, and then we also need to come up with the name of the podcast. That's something that we're going to do at the end of every podcast.
Oh yeah, good point.
Create a juicy and spicy name, or whatever you want to call it. But this segues into that. Kyle DeLorenzo asks, what is everyone's level of spice tolerance? Do you guys love the heat or keep away from spicy food? Bonus points for favorite peppers.
Oh, I'll just go ahead, because I'm not cool enough to know real peppers. I know of them, but I've never really tried just peppers. That scares me. I will say I enjoy heat. Definitely more going in than coming out. I can say that for
sure. I second that.
I mean, you have to say it. That's just how it is. I won't go much higher than like a spicy buffalo sauce heat. Probably people who really like heat are just completely lost all interest in this question and this answer. But I mean, you know, like a good Indian dish with some heat is nice. I like some hot sauces that are nice, but am I interested in pain while eating? No, thank you.
I would agree. I'm like a medium to hot guy at a Thai restaurant, generally speaking. I can take a decent amount of heat, but I don't like the way it makes my time spent on the porcelain throne. No, no, no. It's not good. Certain peppers like affect me in specific ways. Like a sambal from a Thai restaurant just tears me apart. But more of like a jalapeno or like a habanero is something I really like. Honestly, one of my favorite peppers, I get bonus points, guys, is a Scotch bonnet pepper. Melinda's hot sauce, a Scotch bonnet. Ooh, they make a good hot sauce. I'm a big fan of that. And actually, one of my favorite new hot sauce is a probiotic sriracha by the brand Wild Brine. That's something that I've been really digging.
Sounds like the McMahon bidet's got its work cut out for it.
No. As long as I stay under control, then it's all
good. That's the title of the podcast right there, McMahon's Bidet.
That is not the title.
That has to be the title. That's so great.
Well, I want to, before we sign off and come up with a name, I would love to say one more thing before we're done. Or did you answer the question yet, or are you still going?
No, I will answer by saying that when I'm in the right mood, I enjoy some spicy things. It is definitely on my lifelong bucket list to sit down and try a Carolina Reaper once just to see. I want to see what it's like. I've seen people try it. It looks horrible. I have a bit of a addiction to seeing an experience and like wanting to try it as well. I think that's why I first started wanting to travel, is that's what I watched on YouTube, where the travel vloggers. But I would say maybe up to ghost pepper is like what I can handle without losing my mind, but I don't think I would enjoy a lot of ghost pepper. I've had too much, and that I just didn't even remember what I ate.
Enjoying the ghost pepper, Joey?
I don't think so.
There's no way.
Is the wrong word in that case.
Yeah.
If you have like a Naga Jalokia hot sauce or Carolina Reaper, it can ruin your day. It like the heat, but even your stomach. You can feel absolutely terrible, which I felt. Like, I remember getting this spicy vindaloo from a local Indian place of mine. Absolutely terrible rest of the day, just in my stomach. Like, it did not agree with me. So I'm very careful now with my ingestion of spicy foods, because it's not worth it, even if it tastes good.
All right, Simon.
Okay, I just want to give a quick shout out to Disc East. The Disc Golf Expo is happening this weekend. If you're anywhere near the New England area, or if you want to go on the most epic disc golf trip of your life, I mean, it's the coolest disc golf trade show in the world. It's basically the only one, I think, but it is absolutely legit. Two enormous rooms filled with all things disc golf. And one last thing I want to say is that MVP sent me a box of New Balances, because we all know the first balance came out very overstable, very similar to a Pyro Flight, and they gave me a version 2 and a version 3. And they are very good, and I'm very excited. And I just want to say a huge shout out to MVP, who did not only tweak the mold, but did it twice. to give me options, and we'll be selling, I think, both options at this expo. And our goal is to get customer feedback to see what do the people like, what do the people want, and then, of course, what do I like, what do I want is obviously going to be a factor as well, since it's going to be a Simon Line disc. But I'm just going to say I threw a couple shots in my backyard today, and oh man, am I happy with the New Balance.
That's kind of misleading to incredible. Say. It's misleading to say backyard.
Driveway.
Your property? Your property?
My front yard.
No, that sounds sick. I really like the prototype balance, but if it's anything like you say it is, it might be knocking the hex out of the bag.
Yeah, well, if you like the prototype balance, then hold on to it, because I don't think there will be any more made of those.
No, I have a good stash.
Okay, very good. Well, cool, guys. Podcast name, Eagle? Do you have an idea? No, not podcast name. Episode name. The podcast name is Crushed Pepper. That's going to stay. We love it. We're really stoked about the new design. Shout out to Will at MVP's media team with the pepper mill as a disc golf basket. So sick.
How about the name of the podcast should be Whiny Toe Socks? Pizza, bad pizza, and toe socks.
Okay, I can like it. Joey, do you have an idea?
McMahon's bidet.
No, that's not it.
Okay, if Eagle vetoes McMahon's bidet, I'm okay with.
But you would vote for it, right? We have a majority here.
Yeah, but
I'm allowing you to make scandalous episode with my name in it in the future. That's fine.
Do we really want that?
I don't know if MVP would approve, guys. Let's keep it professional, at least for now. Until we get the go from MVP, let's keep it professional.
Pizza, bad toe socks and bad pizza. I like that.
You like it?
Yeah. I think it's
fine. I mean, would you guys click on an episode that's called Toe Socks and Bad Pizza?
I totally would.
Let's do it. I'm sold, okay. Guys. Thank you very much. This episode, Toe Socks and Bad Pizza. Hope you enjoyed.
Peace. Thank you guys for watching.
All right, Eagle, mic check.
What's up? I'm Mike here at the Crushed Pepper Podcast, and I really like my new name.
No, it's Eagle, just say check.
Check.